Chapter 31. Way out. But the words died under the impenetrable insolence of Bertha's smile. Lily sat silent, taking the brunt of it quietly, letting it spend itself on her to the last drop of its accumulated falseness. Then, without a word, she rose and went down to her cabin. Miss Bart's telegram caught Lawrence Selden at the door of his hotel, and having read it, he turned back to wait for Dorset. The message necessarily left large gaps for conjecture, but all that he had recently heard and seen made these but too easy to fill in. On the whole, he was surprised, for though he had perceived that the situation contained all the elements of an explosion, he had often enough, in the range of his personal experience, seen just such combinations subside into harmlessness. Still, Dorset's spasmodic temper, and his wife's reckless disregard of appearances, gave the situation a peculiar insecurity, and it was less from the sense of any special relation to the case than from a purely professional zeal that Selden resolved to guide the pair to safety. Whether, in the present instance, safety for either lay in repairing so damaged a tie, it was no business of his to consider. He had only, on general principles, to think of averting a scandal, and his desire to avert it was increased by his fear of its involving Miss Bart. There was nothing specific in this apprehension. He merely wished to spare her the embarrassment of being ever so remotely connected with the public washing of the Dorset linen. How exhaustive and unpleasant such a process would be, he saw even more vividly after his 2 hours' talk with poor Dorset. If anything came out at all, it would be such a vast unpacking of accumulated moral rags as left him, after his visitor had gone, with the feeling that he must fling open the windows and have his room swept out. But nothing should come out, and happily for his side of the case, the dirty rags, however pieced together, could not, without considerable difficulty, be turned into a homogeneous grievance. The torn edges did not always fit, there were missing bits, there were disparities of size and color, all of which it was naturally Selden's business to make the most of in putting them under his client's eye. But to a man in Dorset's mood, the completest demonstration could not carry conviction, and Selden saw that for the moment all he could do was to soothe and temporize, to offer sympathy, and to counsel prudence. He let Dorset depart charged to the brim with the sense that, till their next meeting, he must maintain a strictly non-committal attitude. That, in short, his share in the game consisted for the present in looking on. Selden knew, however, that he could not long keep such violences in equilibrium, and he promised to meet Dorset, the next morning, at an hotel in Monte Carlo. Meanwhile, he counted not a little on the reaction of weakness and self-distrust that, in such natures, follows on every unwonted expenditure of moral force, and his telegraphic reply to Miss Bart consisted simply in the injunction: assume that everything is as usual. On this assumption, in fact, the early part of the following day was lived through. Dorset, as if in obedience to Lily's imperative bidding, had actually returned in time for a late dinner on the yacht. The repast had been the most difficult moment of the day. Dorset was sunk in one of the abysmal silences which so commonly followed on what his wife called his tacks, that it was easy, before the servants, to refer to this cause, but Bertha herself seemed, perversely enough, little disposed to make use of this obvious means of protection. She simply left the brunt of the situation on her husband's hands, as if too absorbed in a grievance of her own to suspect that she might be the object of one herself. To Lily, this attitude was the most ominous, because the most perplexing, element in the situation. As she tried to fan the weak flicker of talk, to build up, again and again, the crumbling structure of appearances, her own attention was perpetually distracted by the question: what on earth can she be driving at? There was something positively exasperating in Bertha's attitude of isolated defiance. If only she would have given her friend a hint, they might still have worked together successfully. But how could Lily be of use, while she was thus obstinately shut out from participation? To be of use was what she honestly wanted, and not for her own sake, but for the Dorsets. S.E. had not thought of her own situation at all. She was simply engrossed in trying to put a little order in theirs. But the close of the short dreary evening left her with a sense of effort hopelessly wasted. S.E. had not tried to see Dorset alone. S.E. had positively shrunk from a renewal of his confidences. It was Bertha whose confidence she sought, and who P219 greater than should as eagerly have invited her own. And Bertha, as if in the infatuation of self-destruction, was actually pushing away her rescuing hand. Lily, going to bed early, had left the couple to themselves, and it seemed part of the general mystery in which she moved that more than an hour should elapse before she heard Bertha walk down the silent passage and regain her room. The morrow, rising on an apparent continuance of the same conditions, revealed nothing of what had occurred between the confronted pair. One fact alone outwardly proclaimed the change they were all conspiring to ignore, and that was the non-appearance of Ned Silverton. No one referred to it, and this tacit avoidance of the subject kept it in the immediate foreground of consciousness. But there was another change, perceptible only to Lily, and that was that Dorset now avoided her almost as pointedly as his wife. Perhaps he was repenting his rash outpourings of the previous day, perhaps only trying, in his clumsy way, to conform to Selden's counsel to behave as usual. Such instructions no more make for easiness of attitude than the photographer's behest to look natural. And in a creature as unconscious as poor Dorset of the appearance he habitually presented, the struggle to maintain a pose was sure to result in queer contortions. It resulted, at any rate, in throwing Lily strangely on her own resources. As he had learned, on leaving her room, that Mrs. Dorset was still invisible, and that Dorset had left the yacht early, and feeling too restless to remain alone, she too had herself ferried ashore. Straying toward the casino, she attached herself to a group of acquaintances from Nice, with whom she lunched, and in whose company she was returning to the rooms, when she encountered Selden crossing the square. She could not, at the moment, separate herself definitely from her party, who had hospitably assumed that she would remain with them till they took their departure. But she found time for a momentary pause of inquiry, to which he promptly returned, "Colin, I've seen him again, he's just left me." She waited before him anxiously. "Well? What has happened? What will happen?" "Nothing as yet, and nothing in the future, I think." "It's over, then? It's settled? You're sure?" He smiled. "Gee, give me time. I'm not sure, but I'm a good deal sure." And with that S.E. had to content herself, and hasten on to the expectant group on the steps. Selden had in fact given her the utmost measure of his sureness, had even stretched it a shade, to meet the anxiety in her eyes. And now, as he turned away, strolling down the hill toward the station, that anxiety remained with him as the visible justification of his own. It was not, indeed, anything specific that he feared. There had been a literal truth in his declaration, that he did not think anything would happen. What troubled him was that, though Dorset's attitude had perceptibly changed, the change was not clearly to be accounted for. It had certainly not been produced by Selden's arguments, or by the action of his own soberer reason. 5 minutes' talk sufficed to show that some alien influence had been at work, and that it had not so much subdued his resentment as weakened his will, so that he moved under it in a state of apathy, like a dangerous lunatic who has been drugged. Temporarily, no doubt, however exerted, it worked for the general safety. The question was how long it would last, and by what kind of reaction it was likely to be followed. On these points Selden could gain no light, for he saw that one effect of the transformation had been to shut him off from free communion with Dorset. The latter, indeed, was still moved by the irresistible desire to discuss his wrong, But, though he revolved about it with the same forlorn tenacity, Selden was aware that something always restrained him from full expression. His state was one to produce first weariness, and then impatience in his ear, and when their talk was over, Selden began to feel that he had done his utmost, and might justifiably wash his hands of the sequel. It was in this mind that he had been making his way back to the station when Miss Bart crossed his path. But though, after his brief word with her, he kept mechanically on his course, he was conscious of a gradual change in his purpose. The change had been produced by the look in her eyes, and in his eagerness to define the nature of that look, he dropped into a seat in the gardens and sat brooding upon the question. It was natural enough, in all conscience, that she should appear anxious. A young woman placed in the close intimacy of a yachting cruise between a couple on the verge of disaster could hardly, aside from her concern for her friends, be insensible to the awkwardness of her own position. The worst of it was that, in interpreting Miss Bart's state of mind, so many alternative readings were possible, and one of these, in Selden's troubled mind, took the ugly form suggested by Mrs. Fisher. If the girl was she afraid for herself or for her friends? And to what degree was her dread of a catastrophe intensified by the sense of being fatally involved in it? The burden of offense lying manifestly with Mrs. Dorset, this conjecture seemed on the face of it gratuitously unkind. But Selden knew that in the most one-sided matrimonial quarrel there are generally counter-charges to be brought, and that they are brought with the greater audacity, where the original grievance is so emphatic. Mrs. Fisher had not hesitated to suggest the likelihood of Dorset's marrying Miss Bart if anything happened. And though Mrs. Fisher's conclusions were notoriously rash, she was shrewd enough in reading the signs from which they were drawn. Dorset had apparently shown marked interest in the girl, and this interest might be used to cruel advantage in his wife's struggle for rehabilitation. Selden knew that Bertha would fight to the last round of powder. The rashness of her conduct was illogically combined with a cold determination to escape its consequences. She could be as unscrupulous in fighting for herself as she was reckless in courting danger, and whatever came to her hand at such moments was likely to be used as a defensive missile. He did not, as yet, see clearly just what course she was likely to take, but his perplexity increased his apprehension, and with it the sense that, before leaving, he must speak again with Miss Bart. Whatever her share in the situation, and he had always honestly tried to resist judging her by her surroundings, however free she might be from any personal connection with it, she would be better out of the way of a possible crash, and since as he had appealed to him for help, it was clearly his business to tell her so. This decision at last brought him to his feet and carried him back to the gambling rooms, within whose doors he had seen her disappearing. But a prolonged exploration of the crowd failed to put him on her traces. He saw instead, to his surprise, Ned Silverton loitering somewhat ostentatiously about the tables, and the discovery that this actor in the drama was not only hovering in the wings, but actually inviting the exposure of the footlights, though it might have seemed to imply that all peril was over, served rather to deepen Selden's sense of foreboding. Charged with this impression, he returned to the square, hoping to see Miss Bart move across it, as everyone in Monte Carlo seemed inevitably to do at least a dozen times a day. But here again he waited vainly for a glimpse of her, and the conclusion was slowly forced on him that as he had gone back to the Sabrina, it would be difficult to follow her there, and still more difficult, should he do so, to contrive the opportunity for a private word. And he had almost decided on the unsatisfactory alternative of writing, when the ceaseless diorama of the square suddenly unrolled before him the figures of Lord Hubert and Mrs. Bry. Hailing them at once with his question, he learned from Lord Hubert that Miss Bart had just returned to the Sabrina in Dorset's company, an announcement so evidently disconcerting to him that Mrs. Bry, after a glance from her companion, which seemed to act like the pressure on a spring, brought forth the prompt proposal that he should come and meet his friends at dinner that evening. Tea becassins a little dinner to the Duchess, she flashed out before Lord Hubert had time to remove the pressure. Selden's sense of the privilege of being included in such company brought him early in the evening to the door of the restaurant, where he paused to scan the ranks of diners approaching down the brightly lit terrace. There, while the Brys hovered within over the last agitating alternatives of the menu, he kept watch for the guests from the Sabrina, who at length rose on the horizon in company with the Duchess, Lord, and Lady Skiddaw and the Stepneys. From this group it was easy for him to detach Miss Bart on the pretext of a moment's glance into one of the brilliant shops along the terrace, and to say to her, while they lingered together in the white dazzle of a jeweler's window, "I stopped over to see you to beg of you to leave the yacht." The eyes she turned on him showed a quick gleam of her former fear. "Tea to leave? What do you mean? What has happened?" "Nothing. But if anything should, why be in the way of it?" The glare from the jeweler's window, deepening the pallor of her face, gave to its delicate lines the sharpness of a tragic mask. "And nothing will, I am sure. But while there's even a doubt left, how can you think I would leave Bertha?" The words rang out on a note of contempt. Was it possibly of contempt for himself? Well, he was willing to risk its renewal to the extent of insisting, with an undeniable throb of added interest, "You have yourself to think of, you know," to which, with a strange fall of sadness in her voice, she answered, meeting his eyes, "If you knew how little difference that makes." "Oh, well, nothing will happen," he said, more for his own reassurance than for hers. "And nothing, nothing, of course." She valiantly assented, as they turned to overtake their companions. In the thronged restaurant, taking their places about Mrs. Bry's illuminated board, their confidence seemed to gain support from the familiarity of their surroundings. Here were Dorset and his wife once more presenting their customary faces to the world, she engrossed in establishing her relation with an intensely new gown, he shrinking with dyspeptic dread from the multiplied solicitations of the menu. The mere fact that they thus showed themselves together, with the utmost openness the place afforded, seemed to declare beyond a doubt that their differences were composed. How this end had been attained was still matter for wonder, but it was clear that for the moment Miss Bart rested confidently in the result, and Selden tried to achieve the same view by telling himself that her opportunities for observation had been ampler than his own. Meanwhile, as the dinner advanced through a labyrinth of courses, in which it became clear that Mrs. Bry had occasionally broken away from Lord Hubert's restraining hand, Selden's general watchfulness began to lose itself in a particular study of Miss Bart. It was one of the days when she was so handsome that to be handsome was enough, and all the rest her grace, her quickness, her social felicity seemed the overflow of a bounteous nature. But what especially struck him was the way in which she detached herself, by a hundred undefinable shades, from the persons who most abounded in her own style. It was in just such company, the fine flower and complete expression of the state she aspired to, that the differences came out with special poignancy, her grace cheapening the other women's smartness as her finely discriminated silences made their chatter dull. The strain of the last hours had restored to her face the deeper eloquence which Selden had lately missed in it, and the bravery of her words to him still fluttered in her voice and eyes. Yes, she was matchless, it was the one word for her, and he could give his admiration the freer play, because so little personal feeling. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.